Good morning. Mr. Williams, do you want to come to the podium? Just didn't mean to run you around. Can you state your full name and your ABC number if you happen to remember it?
I don't. I was never sent to the form.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
My full name is Antoine Cornelius Davis.
Again, good morning. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a pardon hearing. Present are our board chairman, Dr. C.T. Center of the bench. We'll also introduce the entire board. Starting from the right side, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, Governor Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, Mexicanese Honorable David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing.
Okay.
I'm going to read a very short summary, and most of this hearing will be a dialogue with you. Mr. Antoine Davis is 38 years old, correct?
Yes.
He has a felony conviction for armed robbery, a Class 2 felony. He was, I believe, to be 19 years old at the time of the incident offense. Mm-hmm. He pled guilty on February 6, 2001, and received 5 years of adult probation in Maricopa County. He was discharged from probation on February 7, 2006. Since then, Mr. Davis has been on an impressive journey of personal development to include completing a master's degree in public administration.
Yes.
It's outstanding. So, in short, Mr. Davis, please tell us about yourself and why you think you are deserving of a recommendation by this board for a gubernatorial pardon. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity. Obviously, it's my first time here. I'm getting nervous, pardon my voice. But thank you for the opportunity. And I had a chance to look at all of your backgrounds on the website, so I really appreciate all of your different services and your capacities out of the community. I'm here back in 2000, October 2000. I was involved in a crime against an individual. And I had knowledge of the incident that took place, and I did not do anything to stop it. As a result, I was convicted along with a co-defendant of an armed robbery, felony 2. And because it was my first offense, I was not sentenced to prison, but they gave me intensive probation for 5 years. This process has been one of the most meticulous processes of my entire life. I can't go a day without the remorse that I felt for the individual and what happened to him. And to this day, I'm greatly apologetic for what took place. I did make it a point throughout, once I got on probation, to change my life around. I'm very grateful for this experience, because without it, I wouldn't be the man that I am today. As I mentioned before, it's been a tremendous challenge, a tremendous process of development, maturity, growth. I've learned so much about myself, about life. I've learned responsibility, maturity, the importance of working to earn a living. And I can go on and on. I have plans to share lots of my different processes and things I've learned through this situation. But here we are in 2018, and so it's been October of this year will be 19 years since that felony conviction, and I have completed and satisfied all the mandates, all the stipulations that the court initially gave me, and I've also gone back to school and sought higher education to further rehabilitate myself, to give me a skill set and a tool set to earn an honest living and to make a career. Also, because of that, I found the importance of community service. And so that's one of my passions I have in life now, is to give back and serve the community. And so part of having a felony conviction, and I learned this the hard way, is that when you do have a felony conviction, you're disbarred from certain rights and privileges as a citizen. It's extremely difficult to find a meaningful career, meaningful job. It's hard to find stable housing and employment. And so through the grace of God, I managed to be able to accomplish a lot. With the felony conviction, I've been able to obtain a level 1 fingerprint clearance card. My current career now, I work in the field of development disabilities. I just started my own business in April of last year. And that was extremely, a big achievement for me, to be able to obtain a level 1 fingerprint clearance card with a felony conviction. I'm just describing how I've how through this I've been able to find a sense of purpose and meaning. And so it's extremely difficult to find a job and to find housing. I was able to purchase my first home with my wife because, you know, through the process throughout the 18 years, I've been kicked out of apartments. I've been having to rent houses, and then when they would find out that I had a felony conviction, I would have to vacate the premises. And so it's been a challenge. But regardless of how hard it was, I always was determined to put my best foot forward and not go back to the lifestyle that I used to live. Because there was nothing of value in that. And so here we are in 2019, and although the felony conviction has presented a challenge, you know, to those external things, it's been a weight internally. It's affected my self-esteem, because even though I would try to put my best foot forward, I always have this felony conviction, the stigma of it, lingering in the back of my mind. And I understand that Arizona doesn't have an expungement process, but a governor's pardon is the next best thing, in my opinion, that I could obtain to close this chapter and move forward with my family, my wife, my son, and just live a meaningful life, you know. And so that's why we're here today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Davis. Just a few questions, anyways. You said that you received at least some of your rights back from your conviction?
Yes. So in 2016, I completed the probation, and I went and filed a petition myself to the Superior Court, and I was they reinstated my civil rights. And I did that once again to try to find relief. But to answer your question directly, yes, they did restore my civil rights in 2006. Just to give you a little bit of background, in 2006, that same year, my older sister passed away. And so I took in her son, which is my nephew, and also I was raising my younger sister. Her name is Fatima. And so I had two teenagers with me, and I was trying to make an honest living. And so in 2008, I was working construction. I got laid off when the whole housing crisis happened. And so I wanted to find something that was stable and like recession-proof, and that's how I got into the mental health field. And so in 2008, I went down to the courts again and applied for a vacated judgment. And they denied it because it was too soon. That's what they wrote in the document. It was too soon to tell if I changed my life. And also I had to wait 10 years before they would restore the right to possess a firearm. And so I continued to put my best foot forward. I worked 2 or 3 jobs to provide for them. In 2016, fast forwarding, just recently 3 years ago, this year, December of 2018, just a few months ago, I went and applied again. And this time they granted, they dismissed the charges, they set aside the conviction, they vacated it, and they also restored my rights to possess a firearm. So, long story, I should have just answered it directly, but yes.
No, we want to hear it.
Okay, yes, in 2006, they restored my civil rights, and in 2018, they set aside the conviction, vacated the judgment, and restored my Second Amendment right.
Outstanding. I was wondering if that had been settled, because it seemed like that you didn't get it initially. I was going to ask whether the level of the felony was one of the reasons why you didn't receive it immediately. I know there are some convictions where the whole package seems to be returned to you after you're done or receive your absolute discharge or done with probation.
Right.
So there is a delay in receiving your firearms rights back, is that correct?
Yes. The nature of the conviction was because of the dynamic of the crime, although I didn't actually do it, they left it as a serious and not a dangerous. If they would have classified it as a dangerous, I would not be eligible. And so because it was classified as a serious, I had to wait 10 years.
Okay. Well, absolutely, I want to commend you for your personal development. I recognize, because we see a high volume of cases here of all kinds, that there are people that go down a bad road and they just stay down that bad road, and it's like a revolving door. And individuals whose backgrounds that we hear that are like 6-time convicted felons, and it's heartbreaking. And so you are certainly the sort of case that we hope for, that there mistakes when you're young, or make bad decisions, or fall under bad influence, and are given another opportunity, and actually close that chapter and move on with their lives. And it's great to see how much education you've received. Actually, I would, with the exception of Dr. Wright, I'd question if anyone on this board has a master's in public administration. One of us might. All right, we have one.
Yeah.
But I know it's no minor, my point is it's no minor feat. Mm-hmm. And I think you have really been a post-conviction success story in itself. The question today is, and I am not speaking for the board because we all vote individually, is whether or not this particular request rises to the level of a governor's pardon. And I think it's important that we at least give some sort of explanation for the process, because it can be a little delicate and blurry. But how I explain it is, I often compare it to military honors. And what I mean is this. There are a level of medals for valor in the military. And you'll hear stories that someone received a Bronze Star, for doing something extremely brave, or a Silver Star. And there is a medal that's the second highest honor. It's the cross. It's like the distinguished service cross, or the Navy cross, or the flying cross, depending on which branch of the military. So it's extraordinary achievement to receive, we'll say, a distinguished service cross, but it still may not meet the benchmark of a Congressional Medal of Honor, something that the entire Congress has to vote on. And it's when people say above and beyond, I think it's far above and beyond. Governor's pardons are not approved by the governor easily. So this board today will vote as to whether to recommend to the governor a pardon. And again, I'm not telling you how each individual member is going to vote. I just want to put in context that regardless of what happens today, there's no question of your success and your service to the community and where you have arrived at this point. I feel like I owe you some sort of explanation for the process, so that it's not that we're just sitting here high in the ivory tower saying no to everyone. It's that we really have to make some hard decisions, because at the end of the day, we're putting our name on a document that the governor has to consider whether or not he or she is going to sign. So just hold that in context. So again, you said that you're working in the mental health care community.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that again, sir?
So I was doing construction from 2004 to 2008. The recession hit and I got laid off with no promise to return. And so in 2008, I found what we call group homes. And so it's a residential setting, licensed residential setting through DDD, where adults and children are housed. And so I came in as a direct care staff, immediately just, you know, snatched my heart. I have loved ones that have development disabilities, but had no idea that was the dynamic until I got into the field. And so just from 2008 all the way up until last year, I learned as much as I could. I moved from direct care staff and took a position in human resources, where I learned how to hire, how to discipline. I learned finances. I managed a budget for over $1.2 million with the last company I was with. Impeccable record, no issues, no infractions. I moved on from the Human Resources Department and then I became a program director, where I overseen 26 group homes throughout Arizona. That's in Tempe, Phoenix, Flagstaff, Buckeye, and Kingman, Arizona. And so overseeing 26 group homes. And just, I looking back in hindsight, I can see that my capacity was being stretched, and I was given tools and experience to run a company. And so my wife, she should be here. She's talking now, but
she's in
2000, and this is my wife, 28.
I apologize, I'm sorry.
We've been married 4 years now. It may be 4 years, so we had to drop our kids off for daycare. But so in 2018, through a lot of discussion, we stepped out and we said, you know what, we're going to do this the right way. We've seen a lot of bad examples, a lot of mistakes that could have been avoided. And when you're working in that context under a company, you don't have a lot of leeway and a lot of autonomy to make certain decisions. And so just through our process, we decided to step out and we launched the company in 2018. And so it's going on a year now. One of the most scariest times of our life, you know, because we got to sink or swim. But, you know, through that, like, God is forging our relationship, you know, at deeper and deeper levels. I'm learning how to listen, you know, listen a lot better. And so, but it's been a really good journey, you know, it's been a really good journey. So to answer your question again, and I don't need to be so long with it, but yes, since 2008.
Well, it is great to get all of the backstory. And let me say also how much I appreciate what you do. I have a daughter who lives in a group home, and I'm very, very sensitive to the needs of special needs adults in this case. It's a big step when families recognize that we need group home situations. Absolutely. To help that individual have a full life. I want to ask my fellow board members any other questions for you this morning. Yes.
So, Mr. Davis, I'm just curious about, it looks like there was also an incident the day before this incident. Involving Christown, the jewelry store at Christown. Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's going on in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was 18, 19, even before that, I was living a very bad life, Mrs. Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm. Just making a lot of wrong decisions, involving a lot of illegal activity. I was selling drugs, wasn't too much robbing individuals, but I was selling drugs and just deep in criminal activity, just misguided and making a lot of wrong decisions. And so that circumstance that happened right before that situation, we had the friend and I, the same individual we had, went to the Christown Mall, seen some jewelry, I grabbed it and took off running out of the store. And so I didn't get caught for that, but that actually did happen. I think as I was leaving, I was running so fast, I broke the door off the off the mall exit, you know. And so just to put it in context, I was misguided, full of indiscretions and irrational behavior. And I could have gone to jail for a lot of worse things, you know. And so just kind of to highlight that contrast. So that's what happened.
Okay. And did you make the restitution?
Absolutely.
The door?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was those two things, that and then the next day, mm-hmm. that you did get caught, mm-hmm. the next day.
Yeah. It was a spiral decline. It was really, really bad, you know. So and that's why I mentioned I'm grateful that experience happened, because I needed to sit down. I needed to sit down and look at myself in the mirror and figure out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, this has been a tremendous challenge in the process, but in essence, it saved my life. You know, because it could have been worse.
Exactly. And one of the reasons it says on your application that you want to is attending the Phoenix Citizens Police Academy, is that being held up because of your conviction, or?
Yes, so I crossed paths with an individual that worked for the Phoenix Police Department. His name is Detective Joel Levitt, and I reached out to him and shared a little bit of my process and experience. And as I mentioned to Mr. Quinones,
yes,
one of our passions is civic engagement and community involvement. And so just looking for ways to kind of get involved in the community and give back. And so I discovered that opportunity, and I shared with him what I had going on. At that time, it was last year, my gun rights hadn't been restored and the conviction hadn't been vacated. And so he told me through email, I think I attached it to the main application, he told me that he was more than willing to take it up to his supervisor to see if that was a possibility, but he was concerned about the Second Amendment rights being restored, because part of that program they shoot.
I actually attended the
meeting.
So it's great. It's a great program.
Yeah.
And Mr. Johnson was actually a police officer.
So that.
Yeah. So
yes, homicide
so,
community, right?
Yeah. So that's a very good program. So I do urge you to go to that if you have the opportunity.
Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Pagano.
Thank you, Mr. Pagano. Any Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So let me first of all commend you, because you've really turned your life around. And I was reading here that you went to law school, graduated from law school, you got your master's, and, you know, I heard you tell Mr. Quinones about, you know, your sister's kids and keeping those. So I do want to commend you for that. So what did they say about you attending? Did they tell you no, or did they just say they wanted to wait till you got the paperwork?
Once I got the judge's order from the set aside conviction and the rights restored, I sent it right over to Joel, Detective Joel, and I understand things are very, very busy. He did respond back and say congratulations and that he would take it up to a supervisor, but I hadn't heard anything yet. And so there was a class I was wanting to get into that I think started this month, but again, I didn't hear anything back from him. And I don't want to be, you know, pushy, and I just respect that they have a lot going on. So I didn't hear anything back to answer your question, Mr. Johnson.
So, I mean, done very well, and really, for a pardon, there has to be some really, really extenuating circumstances. So tell me a little bit about what a pardon would do for you. What would it do? Because it doesn't expound your criminal record. It still would be on your history. All of those things would still be there. What is the, your civil rights have been restored. I mean, you've done all the things that you need to do. Your civil rights have been restored. They vacated, you know, the Superior Court charges. See, that's it here. You got a level one fingerprint card from DPS, so that your life is still moving on. So what is it that a pardon would actually do?
Okay, so in 2011, so just to give you guys some more background, I'm a born again Christian. I found Christ inside of when I was incarcerated. And so in 2011, I just felt it strongly on my heart to go and get a pardon, right? And even though I heard that in 2011, when I first downloaded the application, I was completely intimidated. I didn't know how to write. You know, I learned all of this when I went to the university. I didn't know how to write, didn't know how to articulate my process and my journey. I didn't know how to complete the application. And so just throughout the process of time, it was when we first went to go get our contract with DDD, Division of Developmental Disabilities, I had to explain what actually took place. And so as I began to write and articulate what took place, all of this just came into focus. Everything was just connected. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. The crime has been dismissed. It's been vacated. Rights have been restored. Level one fingerprint clearance cards. But I feel strongly I'm supposed to get a pardon. And I hear you guys articulating and explaining how difficult this process is. And this is the last step. This is the last step. I've satisfied all of the stipulations from the courts, haven't committed any more crimes, fines have been paid. I'm even a mentor inside of the community. And so, just reiterating, this is the last step. And even though the governor's pardon is not going to expunge it, it'll give me a peace of mind. It's an accomplishment for me and my family, you know, to help us close this chapter and move on. So I hope that kind of, you know, paints a better picture of why this is important to me and my family.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I did present a very short summary in the beginning, but I did recognize that, I do recognize that you were interested in the Citizens Police Academy. So since receiving your gun rights back, are you eligible for the academy now, or do you still need more than that?
Yes, I am eligible now. As I was mentioning to Mrs. Rittenhouse, once I got the discharge paperwork from the judge, I sent it over to Detective Levitt, and he did acknowledge that he received it, but he didn't follow back up and give me a confirmation if I was going to be accepted in the program or not. In conjunction with that, my education background is in public policy. And so just to go back to Mr. Johnson's question, I have aspirations and I would like to get involved civically. And so even though I have this vacated, I just believe that it would help me in the long run, having this pardon as I engage civically, showing the community and the public that I am a trustworthy citizen, a highly productive, trustworthy citizen. And so in conjunction with the Citizens Academy, I have plans to engage civically as well.
Outstanding. Any further questions? Yes, Dr. Wright.
Thank you so very much. And distinguished colleagues, I want to commend you, sir, for progress that you made over the years, and you can be very proud of it. Now, I just want to make sure, because I'm a little slow, so I'm not as fast as my distinguished colleagues here. Now, when did you commit this crime, sir?
It was October of 2000.
Okay, and then you were placed on probation for how long, sir?
5 years.
5 years. And so you completed your probation, '05 or '06? And so when did you start your education?
I went back to school in 2011.
When you said back to school, you had been to school before?
Yes, I graduated high school.
Okay, you graduated high school.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
No, which goes back to the point about the decisions I was making during that time are completely irrational. You know, I had a college degree. I had a high school diploma. I even had a scholarship to Phoenix College playing basketball. And so the things I was involved with made no sense. I went back to school. I had a high school diploma. And so I went back to school in 2011.
And then you went to ASU. When did you go to ASU, sir?
So I got my associates in 2013, then transferred over in 2013. Finished my bachelor's in 2015. During that time, I was accepted into an accelerated master's degree program where they allowed you to complete your master's while you're still finishing up your bachelor's degree. So my last year as a senior, as a bachelor, kind of overlapped my first year in the graduate program. And so they accepted me in that program, and I completed my master's degree in 2016, May of 2016.
So where did you get your associate degree from?
Public policy. That's my burden. It's my bachelor's.
Where did you get it?
Public policy.
Which school?
ASU.
ASU, okay.
Yeah, both of the degrees are from ASU.
Okay. And, okay.
Glendale, okay.
Glendale Community, okay. That's all I was asking there. Now, I'm trying to figure out now, in my mind, okay, and I really commend you. You've really done an outstanding job. No one can take that away from you. Now, so you receive your master's, and so when did you receive, tell me again when you received your master's, so which year was that?
2016.
And exactly what else have you done since you received your master's, sir? I mean, you already told us what I'm missing. It's already in the documents that you presented. I just want to make sure I'm connecting all the dots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in 2016, I completed the master's degree in public administration. I've been working in the field of development disabilities and just learning as much as I could about this industry. In 2018, my wife and I, we stepped out and started our own company. It's called Beyond Borders, Human Development Services. And so right now we service adults and children. We do respite, attendant care, speech therapy, occupational therapy, and we have plans to continue on with that. I have integrated myself inside of our community. I try to get involved on our HOA board. I'm trying to get involved in the City of Phoenix Citizens Academy. I mentor young men inside of our church community. I'm an excellent father. I'm doing my best to change that, you know, from when I was growing up. And my wife can tell you, I'm a good husband. I'm a good husband. And so those are the things that really galvanize and bring thrust to my pursuits, is being a husband and a father to my family. As I mentioned, I would like to get more involved civically. And so there's a lot of limitations I know and a lot of stigmas, but it's 2019, you know, and this situation happened in 2000. And I can tell you that the justice system, it worked. It did what it was supposed to do. It put a context. It caused me to look at myself and to say, you know what, I don't want that lifestyle. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. There are deficiencies and things can always be improved. And so Another thing, as you mentioned, Mr. Quinones, is that the recidivism rate in Arizona is pretty high. A lot of individuals, they get released from prison and the county jails, and they don't know what to do. And we're not making excuses because we're all adults, but sometimes individuals don't have the resources, they don't have the training, they don't have the development to get out there and put their best foot forward, and so they find themselves in this revolving door. They want to do the right thing, but don't know how. And so I would like to stand in representation and somehow change some kind of policy, some kind of structure to where we can create something to where individuals can get out of jail and see that it is possible to change themselves around.
Let me just ask a couple other questions. Very briefly, Mr. Davis, I see you got it all down perfect. Okay. Are you certified as a counselor in the field that you're in? When you're dealing with, and I ask that in view of what's in the news, in the last 3 or 4 months here in Arizona, are you a certified counselor or that type of behavior, sir?
No, I'm not a certified counselor at all, no.
So do you have someone on your staff who's responsible for?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you mean like in the field of developmental disabilities?
Yes, sir.
Okay. No, I'm not a certified counselor. I have over 10 years of experience. I am contracted with the actual division of developmental disabilities to teach key trainings, prevention and support. We put a strong emphasis on relationship for the staff to teach them how to deal with challenging behaviors. I also teach Article 9, which teaches the individuals on how to uphold the rights, and not violate certain rights that go inside the group homes. Also, on my staff, I mentioned we do speech therapy and occupational therapy. I do have a speech occupational therapist on board as well. And so, me directly, I don't have a license in counseling.
How many people do you have on your staff, sir?
This is just 3 right now. So it's myself, my wife, and occupational therapists.
I guess this will be my last question. Now let's put aside, we all agree with you that you've done an outstanding job. We commend, the direction that you've taken. As Mr. Kawanis expressed much better than I would, how we look at it when someone is, when we make recommendations to the governor for a pardon. And I want you to tell me in your own words, if you were sitting here where I'm sitting today, and you had to write a letter to the governor, what would you say to the governor, sir?
I would ask the governor, if I was sitting in your seat and I was looking at an individual like myself and seeing the totality of the process, I would respectfully ask the governor to consider the power of a second chance. We've all been through circumstances. We've all done things, and that's not to take responsibility away from what I have done. But one of the most powerful things we can ever experience in life is the ability to redefine our starting context. Can we do it again? Some of us don't have the opportunity to do it all over again. And when that opportunity is presented, I think we should take full advantage of it. And especially if I was looking at myself from your position and seeing how much of a challenge it is and how it's not so easy to do that. And you have the power and the decision to recommend that, I would respectfully ask the governor to consider the power of a second chance and to give him an opportunity to even partner and to stimulate that whole dynamic. So
I think that you recognize the fact that the governor is not obligated to accept a recommendation from this board. Without winning anything. Like yesterday we had someone came in for a pardon and he had been turned down by 2 governors, not the current governor, but by 2 previous governors. This board had made strong recommendations. Therefore, the governor is not obligated to even take under consideration recommendations that's why it's so important for us, because as a board member, we're really, sticking our necks out. We're saying to the governor that we've done all this research and that you're well, but where you are, and I don't mean you personally, but when you come before this board, what I'm trying to look at is how can I justify to the governor of this state, a recommendation that the governor might want to consider, because the governor does not always consider, and I can grant you, I can assure you of that, that the governor is not obligated in any way to accept a recommendation from this board. That just, not, I don't want to be negative, and I'm trying not to be negative, but I guess one of my concerns is, you know, you, I guess, beginning, what, in 16, you've been quite successful professionally. Has that been long enough time for you to, in your opinion, to be granted a pardon, sir?
Respectfully, I would have to say that it's been a little bit longer since 2016. Over the last 10 years, I've only had two jobs. One was working construction since 2004 to 2008, and the only reason I was departed from that job was because the economy crashed and I was laid off. In 2008, I got into the field of development disabilities, and I was with the same company up until 2018 when we stepped off and started our company. And so my professional career has been consistent, it's been flawless. I serve with integrity. I understand the importance of serving with individuals. If I could just go back, and when you were talking about the, you know, why would you recommend it to the governor? Again, you know, we have a serious crisis here, you know, with the issue of recidivism and individuals not having opportunities and people doing the wrong thing. Why not? Why would we not take an opportunity to present to the governor that the system is working and that we also have an opportunity that we can change some things? I'll stand. I'll go. I'll be in representation and help. I can help. Provide ideas and resources for a lot more individuals that are stuck in the system. And so I'm seeing from a distance, looking at the work that the governor is doing, and he is doing a tremendous job in Arizona, in my humble opinion. And so this is just one more aspect that Arizona has an issue with, the crime. And so that, in conjunction with me, you know, seeing the power of a second chance, I would, Mr. Wright, if I were in your position, I would recommend it to the governor.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Cornish.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Any further questions? I have to tell you, Mr. Davis, I do like your confidence. I recognize it as genuine. At this point of the hearing, I'm going to ask if anyone wants to speak on your behalf. Thank you, ma'am. If you'd like to come to the podium, and then when you get to the microphone, I'll ask you to state your name.
My name is Tony Davis.
And what would you like to show the board, ma'am?
I'm just going to take off my jacket because I'm an attorney, but I sweat, and you're respectable of the board, and I'm nervous. So again, I want to apologize for my tardiness. I had to drop off our children. As I said, my name is Tonya Hugh Davis. I am the wife of Mr. Davis. I am a family law attorney here, a practitioner solo. Prior to that, I was a prosecutor for the city of Mesa. You've heard it all from my husband, and I did my best to read the rules, so I'll try not to repeat myself or repeat too much of what he said, but I do just want to share some little background, and then the comments that I have to encourage this board to consider making a recommendation of my husband, Mr. Davis, for a pardon. I have known him for 11 years. We've been married, it will be 4 in May of this year. We have one son, a toddler, who's going to be 3 next year. We also raise my 9-year-old niece. She's actually my niece-in-law, his brother's daughter. One thing I will say about Mr. Davis, and I think you have the packet with the explanations, but a lot of the time that's passed from the actual conviction till now, outside of academia and professional accomplishment and those things that are really practical and tangible, I think it's important to just say, my husband has raised, now will be 3 children who are not his own. Once he was released from probation, very suddenly his older sister passed away. During that time, while he was working construction and attempting to rebuild his life, he raised his nephew, which was his sister's son, and also his younger sister, because his mother had issues with substance abuse. So he was raising 2 teenagers at the time that he was trying to rebuild his life. And so, Dr. Wright, to your concern and your consideration about, has enough time elapsed and are there enough accomplishments achieved? I would say it's important for context to understand that as these accomplishments that you do see on the paper have been achieved, they've been through much struggle, through much sacrifice, through much giving, that of which many of us still have to do while we're trying to build ourselves up and build our careers and make our way through life. So I would just say that. But I guess the bottom line comes down to this: what comments can I give you that would help to give you justification? I appreciate the candor, and I again just respect the value of all of you here about what a governor's pardon really means, and the level of achievement and recognition that it represents. And I would say that my husband is a man full of integrity. And I got a little emotional back there, and I'll try not to here. I'm just proud. I'm very, very proud. And even for him to be able to come up here and explain himself to you, to this board, and even for your consideration, it already means something, I think symbolically, which is not what we're here for, so don't get me wrong, but symbolically, just to have you consider, we're grateful. My husband, in this climate, I would say, Dr. Wright, for you, your question was, if we were on your side, of things, and you had to justify a recommendation which could be accepted or could be denied, how do you do it? And I would say very boldly and frankly to this board that there are many men with less distinction in higher places who have received a pardon who would be less deserving than my husband. I would say that in this climate, and I understand this is not a partisan board, and I'm glad for that. But I would say in this climate, in our society, as Americans, and in the state of Arizona, there are a lot of things that are intangible that should be considered, even at the level of a governor. And those things are political affairs, police affairs with the general population, right? I would say that a lot of the individuals that are idolized are those that the regular middle-class man cannot relate to, right? Individuals who have received high political places, who are superstars in their sports, who have extraordinary talent because they can sing or dance or do something else that is commendable. But I would say those are not the people that the citizenry of the state of Arizona can naturally connect to. And I think that to award even a recommendation to a man as my husband would show the citizens of Arizona that our governor cares not only about those who have reached high political places or have reached places of high being highly visual, right? But for the man who can make a mistake as a youth, recognize the mistake, and systematically take the time with the tools that are afforded to every citizen in the state of Arizona, change his life around, build his family, right? Before I got my law degree, I got a degree in sociology and in many disciplines, but in sociology, we talk about how family is one of the building blocks of society, right? And I would say that there's a general sense of some of those things decaying in our society and in our state, right? We have issues with our DCS and with parents in general, and we're overburdened and overstaffed. And to award even a recommendation to a man who had no father, who had no real present mother, who was convicted, you know, before he could drink, right? For a man then to take the time to turn around his life, to find God, to find faith, to believe in something bigger than himself, to pursue that thing, and within it, find a wife, raise three children, have a child of his own, and be a very ever-present, remarkable father to even a toddler, right, and beyond, I think is something to celebrate and to encourage, and something that justifies the removal of a mark. I would say that when you look at my husband's, if we talk DNA, right, I would say that even though he has achieved much in by way of education and even by way of profession, there's much that he hasn't and could. And again, I'll be bold and kind of frank because he's modest. But I believe my husband could be a city manager. He's articulate and he's bright. and he's passionate for people. You know, I believe my husband could be a mayor. I know my husband would like to run for office. And these are things that even though he has his gun rights restored and he has his CCW permit and he has a set-aside, are still marred by a felony conviction, by which I understand a governor's pardon would remove, but it would aid, you know, and it would encourage. And in the eyes of the citizenry, it would cause him to look different than he looks now, because the governor's approval, or even, you know, even this board's recommendation is something that says to the people, this man has changed beyond maybe a notation on his court record. And so I guess that is my heart to share that and now I'm going to avoid repeating myself. But the points that I came to make are that he is a changed man. I am Nigerian by descent, and there's a joke amongst first-generation Americans, at least Western Africans, right? So what are you going to be, an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer? Those are your options, right? And my parents were not very happy when I decided to marry a man who had a felony conviction, and other reasons, right? But he has shown them, and he has shown me, that the conviction is not who he is, that the crime is not who he is. He's worked very, very hard to become the man that he is, and I am so grateful that he is the father of my child and will be the father of my children. And so I guess before you, I would just ask for your real sincere consideration, because again, and I'll finish with this, if there is a man deserving, and I am biased, but I do have tangible reasons and justifications for my position. If there is a man, a regular middle-class citizen, resident of the state of Arizona, who is deserving of consideration, even just consideration for a pardon, to be able to elevate him to levels of representation in places like you are, to help those coming behind, it would be Mr. Antoine Davis. And so I thank you for listening to me. I thank you for your consideration. And I would hope that maybe you would give an affirmative recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Well, just one second. I'm going to ask if my fellow board members have a question for you. I have a quick follow-up, and I recognize this is a good hearing, but where are you working now? You said you were a city prosecutor in Mesa?
Yes, I was a municipal prosecutor in Mesa, and then we had our son. And I realized very quickly after I returned from maternity leave that I would rather be with him than them. So I left, and I have actually started my own law firm, the
Outstanding
Law Group. So I've been a solo practitioner for 2.5 years. I supplement with contract work with LegalZoom. But I have been taking a heavier caseload. And so, like you said, it's been a really scary time. 2014, I graduated from law school. 2015, he got his bachelor's. 2016, he got his master's. We got married in 2015. We got pregnant 2 months later. And so then we bought a house in October of 2015. We moved in 2016, had a son in 2016. So that time period, we took a bit off more than we could chew, a little bit. And then I left work 2017, or right before 2017. And I started my own firm, started doing contract work, and then started to take on my own family law cases. So that's what I'm doing now. I have a caseload that's steady, about 10 to 15 cases. And my husband has been trading and running the business. And that's what we do. And we just, it's kind of feast and famine sometimes, but you risk and you sacrifice to be able to build something that you leave behind. And that's what we decided to do before we couldn't do it anymore.
Thank you, ma'am. And if you get an opportunity to argue before the Supreme Court, I think you'll kill it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, Mr. Davis, I want to double check on my board members before we continue. We're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. But this is your pardon hearing, or for consideration of a pardon. So is there anything else that you would like to share with the board before we go into discussion?
Yeah, I've spoken and laid everything out, and so just again, I'm greatly, greatly appreciative of the time and the opportunity. I trust the process. I trust you guys' opinion, and you know, I trust it. And so I thank you again, and just look forward to seeing what the outcome is going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. If you'll just have a seat, the board will be going into discussion under the open meeting laws of Arizona. And Ms. Davis, you're reminded, as we've been told, this is a unique quasi-judicial panel. We deliberate in public. It's all in the open. There's no secret meetings. There's no clerks to do research. It all happens right here. So the board will be going into discussion, and we'll get back to you shortly with our decision, Mr. Davis.
Okay. Stay right here.
Yes, you just stay right there. We will go into discussion right now. And the board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, this has been a very interesting hearing. As I stated early, I think there's no question as to Mr. Davis's success, and he is certainly the sort of case that we want to see in terms of people getting in trouble in the criminal justice system, in his case, receiving probation, and really turning that corner and moving on with life. It sounds like that, and he was very open about it, that he was under some negative influence in his youth. And this is just a great story in terms of what an individual can do when they decide to move on, get an education, make an impact, serve the community on so many levels. But as always, pardon decisions are challenging as the bar is, I think, very high. And Mr. Davis's wife said something that I'm going to paraphrase, but about people in other jurisdictions, so to speak, that have received pardons. And I'm going to just spout off an opinion. I do take exception when individuals become celebrities, and that seems to be the reason as to why they may receive a gubernatorial pardon in whatever state that they live in. They may very well be serving the community, but I think it shouldn't be just a question of influence. I think it has to be merit and service, and really putting that conviction behind them. I will say what I'm struggling with is that he was convicted of a serious felony, and it took him some time to get his gun rights back. That has not blamed Mr. Davis for that. I'm kind of speaking in criminal justice terms, that there was a built-in delay for receiving those rights back because of the nature of the crime. I think Mr. Davis is on a trajectory, to be sure, of it seems a little short, but of success, of serving this community, of making an impact. The question today is whether or not I believe whether he has arrived at that level, at that high bar of making a recommendation to the governor for a pardon. Again, I was trying to say I think he's on a trajectory. I'm not quite sure if he's arrived at this point, but I am not closed on this issue, and I really look forward to hearing from the input of my colleagues. The Honorable Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you. When I look at Mr. Davis, I see a leader, and I see obviously an intelligent man, very articulate, and genuine, sincere person. I mean, I don't think he's held anything back from us. And it actually thrills me that the criminal justice system worked But we just almost never see that. I mean, it's just very, very rare that we see that. And truly, what I see in him is potential, is the potential. And I particularly like that his chosen direction is in service, in public service. And we've had others who came here for pardons, and their reasons for being here were so I can do better in my business, so I can, but it's private business, that then they're talking about making money. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about service, about doing things for people, and particularly people who are in a disadvantaged state in some way. I just think that this particular governor, with his emphasis on second chance, is you know, we're kind of at the right time. Timing is everything.
True.
So those would be my contributions to this. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
I'm gonna say a couple of things. First of all, I think that Mr. Davis and Ms. Davis made an excellent presentation. I'm going to credit Ms. Davis that she just kind of came right back and kept it in the ballpark. But I'm going to say a couple of things. One of them is I think Mr. Davis has, he used the term the power of a second chance. And in this situation, you know, I'm going to say that he has had the power of a second chance. I'm also going to say that I think Mr. Davis has already received a pardon from a higher power and a higher authority. I see that he is the interim pastor at his church, that he's done, that he's been able to accomplish some things. I'm going to say that I sympathize, you know, with, you know, him having to raise or to take the custody of his sister and nephew and the struggles that it causes to do that while working and attending school. And I'm going to say that because I have a daughter that, you know, she was the godmother of two kids, you know, to my oldest two grandsons. And she took them on as she was working on her master's at ASU too. And I would say that, you know, I was really against it. I'm like, you know, you were in school and all these things were going on, but she did it. The boys came out good. She went ahead. She got her doctor's degree, you know, as a result. So I do understand that struggle, but I think it's an exceptional commitment beyond extenuating circumstances, that when a person who is struggling within their own family stops to take the opportunity to take in other family kids and responsibility of teenagers, that's to me is unselfish, extenuating circumstance that I see, you know, with the crimes that he was committed. And I think that I just think that those things to me touch me in a way that I feel like that's in an extenuating circumstance that you don't see. We do see, you know, if you have a child, you raise your child, you do those things that you need to do, but it is going beyond and above to take in someone else's kids and have to do that. I think the fact that he took his sister, his nephew, and I think it may have been a niece, I don't recall exactly how many it was, but took them in to raise them to get a job. And when many people may have decided to give up, he didn't give up. He did construction, and when that job went out, you know, he continued to struggle to move his life forward in this particular situation, continue to move forward to get his education. And he's still reaching out to help others with the disability that he's doing, the construction that he did, self-employed, and he's still raising those kids. I do think that in this particular case, because of those extenuating circumstances of what he's doing to give back the opportunity that he took to raise the other kids, I just think that's the part that really, you know, goes beyond the extenuating circumstances to me. We expect people to encourage them to go to school, get educated, get a job, and better their lives and not participate in criminal activities. But it's going over and beyond, I think, to take in the other ones. That's the part that that's where I'm at. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
I would ask you, Mr. Johnson, I didn't quite catch whether or not you were supportive of a pardon.
I would be supportive at this particular time. I would say that I would be supportive, and those are the reasons why I would be supportive.
No, I heard all the support. I just wasn't sure if you were continuing the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Connors. I'd like to say congratulations on your success, both of you. It's very impressive. It is a good example of what the overall criminal justice system should be, and I emphasize should. I learned a long time ago that Oregon was information system, the CEGIS system, is a big boogeyman for anybody that's been arrested. They're long charged. I used to do traffic accidents, and somebody's driving their car, and something happens, even if it's DUI, but if somebody dies, we put those to the county attorney's office, and it gets entered into the CEGIS. But I learned that if you have a driver that didn't do anything wrong and they just happen to be the driver looking at criminal charges, if you list them as a suspect because it's a possible homicide, they're always a suspect in a homicide. And it's not delineated that was just a paperwork thing. But the system is like that. It gets in there and it goes away. I think that advocates for offenders to be able to get back into society should push and try to get the legislature to do something about our law. So at the point that Mr. Davis is at, instead of going for this pardon, which is nationally, it's up there further than an Oscar or an Emmy or anything else like that. A person could go on with their life and not have this information in there if after the point of restoration of everything, it wouldn't necessarily be expunged, but it would be put into a tool box that's not looked at until you go into the highest security clearances and things like that. Further up than another one print card. But I'm sitting here the whole time listening to this, and I don't want anybody to take this wrong, but it's like watching a commercial, and this is a compliment, not a detriment. It's like watching a commercial where they're trying to put all this good information out there and pull everybody in and say, hey, this is the best way we should go, or this is what you can do with life and everything else. And I think it's fantastic. The kids are working together, everything's been accomplished on both sides. And I have to say, at this point in time, I think I would be in favor of recommending to the governor for a pardon. And my hope would be not only that Mr. Davis could achieve that goal that he's looking forward, but maybe the governor's office would possibly take note and maybe do more to help. Because I know Governor Ducey really wants to make sure that offenders come out and have an opportunity to reintegrate without having no choices. You have a choice to make, you make the right choice, but a lot of times people don't have the it's not so much the opportunity to make that choice, it's the ammunition, so to speak, to move forward with that, the equipment you need to be successful. And doing this job, we've seen a lot of people come back in front of us, and just a little bit more guidance, and they can be there. So I think at this point, I would be in favor of recommending it to the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Newell. And Dr. Wright?
Thank you so very much, Mr. Kiwanis. I think that this board has, as one board member, we have to take everything under consideration. And I think that there's no question about it that Mr. Davis and his wife, they both have done an outstanding job. But what his wife probably does not know is that I know her country probably better than she does. Country of birth, Nigeria. Number of people from Nigeria, including number of heads of state, presidents of Nigeria, have been probably to Nigeria at least 50 different occasions over the years. That's not neither here nor there for this purpose. But I just wanted to point that out, that someone here does understand Nigeria quite well. I keep hearing us say that the board, that the criminal justice system has done its job. As one board member, I'm going to disagree with that. The criminal justice system has not done anything. Mr. Davis has done this on his own. The criminal justice system in Arizona has not done anything to help Mr. Davis, in my opinion. Now, he did. He's taken it on his own with his wife and his family, but he's not even been incarcerated. He's not even been in prison. He's done an outstanding job. I think that what you said up front, Mr. Kiwanis, always come back to my mind. At what level is exceptional? And what is exceptional? I can't disagree with Mr. Johnson, but I think that this is what we do as people, as a people, as Mr. Johnson said, is his niece or whoever it was. Did the same thing. I mean, we raise our family members. That's one of the things that we're good at. But is that exceptional? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not too sure whether it's exceptional or not. Because that's an expectation. My concern, which I've expressed before in a different way, is has he actually been out long enough to be offered a pardon at this time? I know I use 16 as the year. He challenged that. He says it goes way far beyond that. Has he really been out there long enough? And I still raise that same issue. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wright. This has been very heavy discussion, and again, it's never easy to determine where that benchmark is in such decisions. And I am going to go ahead and make a motion, and that is I'm going to make a motion that we recommend to the governor a pardon for Mr. Antoine, if I'm not mistaken, Cornelius Davis, and that is my motion.
I'll second.
Okay.
And once again, I'm going to disagree, sir.
Okay. Seconded by the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Agreed upon by the Honorable Mr. Neal, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, he did.
What did you mean?
Yeah.
Pardon me, I was just getting confirmation. Disagreed by the honorable doctor, right? And per our guidelines for such recommendations, the letter will be written by myself. It doesn't have a firm due date for this as it is a part of it. I'm going to ask for 10 working days, sir.
10 working days, yes.
So, Mr. Davis, if you will stand up. I will repeat that we made a motion to recommend the pardon to the governor's office. It was 4 days to 1 day. I will be writing the letter to the governor's office. I have 10 working days to do it. Do you have any questions at this point?
No, thank you.
And again, all we can say, and I'm always careful to be speaking for the board as we're all individuals, but it's a recommendation. It's not a guarantee that our esteemed governor will sign the letter, but we will certainly send that letter to the governor's office, and I cannot quite give you a timeline either as to how long that letter will be reviewed, so I ask you to be patient with the process.
There's not a timeline, sir.
Oh, there isn't a timeline, so yes, there, thank you, sir. There's not a clear timeline as to how long the governor has to review that document, but I do want to thank you for coming for the board today. You obviously made a very compelling argument before this board, as well as the support from your spouse. And so if the accomplishment today is that recommendation, then I want to congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
And this will conclude our hearing. Thank you, sir. Thank you.